Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by. We are going to touch on a subject today that we have talked about before. And the reason we're going to talk about it again is because it's really a much bigger problem than anybody, I think, understands. And the reason it's such a problem isn't evident just at face value. It's hoarding, and it is, I would say, maybe not epidemic proportions in our world today, but it's a lot worse than everybody understands it is. Here recently, in our neck of the woods here in South Florida, Deerfield Beach, which is about, 25 miles south of me here in West Palm, and I lived there for quite a long time, and I still have family members that live in Deerfield Beach. And there was a big thing on TV about a Deerfield landlord that helped some folks clean up their places. And it's actually going to air on, I think it already did, as a matter of fact, on the Hoarding Buried Alive, the show that's on TV that we talked about once before. But I, every time I watch this show, I've watched it several times, because I'm I don't know that I'm a hoarder. Of course, you never like to think those kind of things about yourself, so maybe I'm wrong. I'm relatively neat about my home, but I do let things pile up. And I have specific spaces in the house and in other houses that I've lived in that are just packed full of stuff. And it makes you wonder if we all don't have a little bit of that problem. But when I looked at this, and when I've watched the hoarding show, the thing that impresses me the most is that it's so dangerous. I mean, dangerous. The other night at around, 11, it was probably a rerun, but I couldn't fall asleep, so I was watching TV, and I found a show, and they had these two women, a mother and daughter, both of them very obese because they don't very often leave their home. And part of the hoarding is food. I mean, food everywhere, and junk food, McDonald's, Burger King, all that kind of stuff, the wrappers and all that was all over the house. But the eldest lady used a cane, and walking was difficult for her, but navigating through this house was like damn near impossible. And I'm watching her, and there's the guy taking the video is behind her, watching her navigate through this very, very narrow space in her hallway. And I don't know why she hasn't hurt herself. It never tells you that they've hurt themselves, but I suspect that, first of all, they're very unhealthy, and second of all, they'd almost have to get hurt. One that I watched, the younger, often it's a mother and daughter, would have to climb mountains of junk to get to the area that they cleaned out to sleep in. And they had a little tiny television that they would get into this like alcove of where they kept it relatively cleaned off and watch TV and sleep. And that's what they did almost 24/7. So along with the inability to throw anything away, they have no sense of purpose at all. And I'm wondering if there's a connection there someplace, the inability to keep their nest in order has something to do, or it's the reason why they can't have a true life. So I'm going to spend some more time looking up information and seeing what local and not so local psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, things like that have to say about this, because it seems to me that it's a lot more involved than just not being able to throw anything away. And the other thing that I suspect is that they don't even see it. I have a terrible feeling that I'm not on the air this morning. I don't know what the deal is, but I don't think I'm in here.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. You are now in the host queue.
Hi, honey. I think I'm finally back in. I don't know what was going on. The computer kept going down. I could get into everything. And I got on my dashboard, but it didn't say I was on the air. The phone says I am. I think I'm back on now. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I hope I'm back on the air. I don't know what the deal was this morning, but all of a sudden, I lost my complete dashboard. So I hope I'm on now. If there's somebody out there listening, if you could let me know, that would be awesome. But it looks like everything is up and running. So I don't know how much everybody heard of everything I was saying, because I wasn't paying attention when I went off the air. But today's show is going to be about hoarding. And as I mentioned in the very beginning, Deerfield, very close to us here in West Palm, a little bit further south, had a real incident where the landlord actually came in and saw what was going on. And it was very interesting to hear what the problem was. So I think what the thing I'm the most worried about is that these people have the opportunity to, first of all, be hurt and to be very sick. So one of the things that I'd like to read to everybody is this story that I found about these Deerfield people, and let you know what's happening in some of these cases. And in this case, it was a wonderful landlord that actually helped them. Shell, are you on? Shelley? Well, it's telling me Shelley's here, but I'm not hearing her. So hopefully the rest of the world is hearing. Rotting food, rampant bugs, and stinky cat litter, an intoxicating mix. It was for the producers of a television reality show who followed the scent to a South Florida residence for a program about hoarders. On Wednesday night, Hoarding, Buried Alive will air the story of three renters at a Deerfield Beach complex whose apartments were crammed full of piles of junk. It wasn't fit for human or even animals to live in. The smells, the odors, the filth, said Ben, owner of the Praxis Apartments on Southwest 11th Way in Deerfield Beach. It was a horrible situation. TLC would not release the last names of the landlord or the hoarders at the 224-unit Praxis, an affordable housing complex for residents over 55. Ah, are you here?
Yep.
Ah, okay,
yep.
Okay. This, you know what it's telling me? My stream is 3 hours and 44 minutes long. I suspect this has to do with me changing the time on my computer, because my computer loses 3 hours all the time, and I changed the times this morning. And
that's
why it's so messed up now. But you can hear me all right, though, right?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine. So
okay,
I'm
okay.
reading
now,
this article. Yes.
Nene, before you get going, I'm going to be getting in my car. I have to drop Nene at work. I'm going to be on my cell phone, but there's two dead spots, so if you lose me, I'll just dial right back in.
Okay. All right. Fine. So I'm going to finish reading this. It was a horrible situation, and they wouldn't give the names of the landlords or the people in question. Ben, who bought the property last spring, discovered three of his tenants were classic hoarders, loath to throw anything away. He contacted the reality show for help in cleaning out his residence apartment. "We really want to help these people," Ben said. "They are poor old people. They live on very little a month. They got caught up in the hoarding thing." There was Fred, a security guard and a 10-year tenant who succumbed to TV ads buying all manner of unnecessary items because it made him feel good. "I was insulating myself against people," he said. "I know in my head it's wrong to overbuy or hoard." Dorothy prowled thrift shops and yard sales, purchasing mounds of goods. "I don't classify myself as a hoarder. I just have a lot of possessions," she said. "My world is lonely, but this is safe for me." Sandy, who lives on disability, had four cats in a roach-infested apartment piled so high with debris, one could only negotiate the area through the narrow paths. She spent her days wrapped head to toe in a blanket. "I covered my ears because I do not want roaches crawling in my ears. I've actually gotten one in my mouth." Ben threatened to evict the three unless they cleaned their units of all trash. "That's our last resort," I said. "We didn't want to displace them." TLC enlisted an Atlanta psychologist and professional organizers to help the three tenants transform their apartments. During filming in September, trash was thrown from windows, lugged out by workers, sorted on the complex's lawn, and the hoarders were sometimes bitter to see all they had accumulated unceremoniously slung into trash bins. "I went through a very traumatic time with this," said Sandy, 69. "Some things got discarded that never should have been discarded, including a broken purple bike the 315-pound woman had never ridden. Now Fred has a new apartment that stays wide open and uncluttered. He's living great right now." Dorothy, moved into a mobile home and made a new start with somewhat fewer items. She at least went into the mobile home with not too much stuff, said the landlord. Sandy acknowledged she needed help to curb her hoarding urge and still labors to keep her space clean. She cleans her cat litter twice a day, but books are still stacked up on the floor and clothes reside in boxes on her dining room table, and it's laden with clutter. And she still shares the unit with unwanted companions. I see at least one or two roaches every day. There are roaches right now on my cabinet behind my coffee pot. But the apartment is far less cramped than it was 6 months ago. I can certainly get around in it. I have more room, life is better, and I feel better about me. Ben is happy to have his property and his tenants under control. We changed these people's lives, he said. They're stabilized, and we keep an eye on them. So this show was aired, I believe it was last Wednesday. But I think what I'm the most concerned about is, like I said in the very beginning, the health of these people. Most of them are not young, although some of the shows I've watched, they've been very young. But health and the health of others, if you're living in an apartment building and you can't figure out what the smell is, and you're going through and cleaning under your sink and around the back of your commode and checking for mildew and things like that, it's very possible that you're living in a complex where all the apartments are, connected, that it's actually one of the apartments on either side of you or over you or under you.
That's the first time I've ever heard a story about hoarding in an apartment complex. All the other shows that I've ever seen have always been about people in their private homes, and the home is on the verge of being condemned and leveled because of the interior damage from all the garbage.
Yeah, me too. Well, usually in apartment buildings, especially low income, there are people who go through and and check and see what's going on with everybody. So I think that that might have something to do with this problem is it's being inspected every now and then. And I hate that. I hate the thought that somebody has to have their their life examined like that. I hate that. But on the same token, I think it would be unfair to, put everybody else in harm's way.
Well, the bigger picture there is that it's like secondhand smoke. When they made smoking inside of restaurants and workplaces and things like that illegal, because I choose not to smoke. Why do I have to breathe in your smoke and still be unhealthy and not even be a smoker? So when the things that we do that most people would consider to be private, when they harm the public, then there has to be some way of dealing with that. And it also exhibits mental illness, because it's not a normal conduct to hold on to garbage, to hold on to rotting food, to constantly buy things that you don't need and buy 3 and 4 and 5 of them and keep them in a room so that you can't even walk around your house. This is a mental aberration, and it's usually caused due to some traumatic event that happened in these people's lives. When I've watched the show before, I would say more than half of the people that were hoarding, it wasn't a lifetime thing with them. Some of them have been doing it their entire life, but some of them, it was precipitated after some sort of a catastrophic or traumatic event that happened in their life, and then all of a sudden they started hoarding because they lost someone or something over here that was traumatic to them, and then they just started holding on to everything, even garbage. It was like this mental short circuit in their brain because they were so traumatized by losing the one thing that was out of their control. They just started holding on to everything in their lives, and it went to the other extreme, But having clutter around you and hoarding are two very different things. I've had my household cluttered at times, but never in my living space. The worst clutter that my house ever was because I had several families living with me. I had a family, I had my mom, everybody had a lot of stuff. You know, trying to keep things as neat as possible. But that's not necessarily hoarding either, though. I mean, just if you have a lot of property, if you have a lot of things. Hoarding is when you have so much property and it's stuff that's broken, it's stuff that you don't need, it's duplicates, triplicates of things that you buy that you're not even using the first one yet. That's when you're getting into hoarding, when you're just bringing in stuff that should be thrown out, that's true garbage, or things that you will never use in 10 lifetimes. And that's when you can see that the person really starts having an issue. And also when it causes health and safety issues, like they can't move around their own home, they can't sleep in their own bed because it's piled up with stuff, so they're sleeping on the couch, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never watched a hoarding show that was just about clutter. Any hoarding show I have watched has been borderline, some of them bathrooms, water has quit, especially in, like you said, most of them are about standalone homes, and bathrooms that have ceased to be functional, and nobody has asked for any help to clean them up. So sewer is backed up in bathtubs, and people quit bathing, and people quit taking care of themselves. It becomes a source of refuge for them, and kept them, you know, feeling safe surrounded by all this junk because they feel protected. The one lady says, "I was insulating myself against people. I know in my head it was wrong to overbuy or hoard. And my world is lonely, but this is safe for me. I just have a lot of possessions." So you see how they see themselves, which is true of anything that is overboard for any of us. We seldom. We see what we perceive to be the truth. And it is our truth, but it isn't the truth to the outside world. And every hoarding show I've watched, it isn't the one. I remember I talked about the two sisters, and they had they had so many appliances, like coffee makers and blenders and toasters. That was their big thing. And the kitchen counters, you couldn't have used one of those things if you wanted to, because it was just packed chock full. And then on top of everything else, there always seems to be food garbage. And, you know, it's first of all, not safe because you can't move. It's also not safe because of the bacteria that's being bred in a place like that. And breathing in bacteria is as bad as touching it. So in a house, and there's no way in some of these southern places, you know, in the southern states, where if that's what their house looks like or their apartment looks like, you know for sure nobody cleans the AC ducts. You know for sure nobody takes care of any of that kind of stuff. So that putrid air and those airborne bacteria are being breathed in. And we talked about health yesterday on the show, and I wanted to remember to say to people, for those of you that are struggling with all different kinds of things, but we talked about detox and things like that. And is everybody aware of the fact that the nose hairs, your nose hairs inside the nostrils of your nose, is one of the first places that picks up the bacteria in the air? At the Institute, we organized a package that we could send with people. It was like a fly home package if you were going to be on an airplane and you had just brought yourself to a better place in regard to your health and your well-being, and you were pretty clean in a good place. You get on an airplane where the AC just keeps recycling the air all the time. It's the worst place to get sick. So we would send people home with colloidal silver in the nasal bottle so that you could keep putting colloidal silver in your nose to keep the nose hairs clean that will pick up that airborne bacteria. And it's really very good. And, of course, now, along with everything else, when I read these stories, is hospitals are rampant right now with MRSA. So if a hospital that is, quote, unquote, sterile, imagine what kind of bacteria and stuff is going on in these places. Because like I said, it's not just inanimate things that they're hoarding. It's not just, like, all these people talked about the things that they buy. You know, they go, the old man buys stuff on TV, and, you know, all the shop, TV shopping networks and everything, and the one lady goes around and buys things at, thrift stores, and the other lady has cats. And her apartment is the worst one. And, of course, she lives on disability, so that probably means that there's one of two things going on with her. Either it's psychological or physical, her disability. And she's the one who says, I cover my ears, and she's had a roach in her mouth. So you know what kind of bacteria is going on in there. I mean, that's got to be horrendous. So
I think the animal hoarders, people that hoard both property and or animals or have animals in their hoarding. But whenever you put animals into the mix, the houses are in such worse case because now you're dealing with the bacteria, you're dealing with bugs, you're dealing with mold and mildew, which is another huge issue among hoarders, but they can't see where the mold and mildew is growing, and their environment is becoming toxic because of that. And then you add animal feces and urine on top of that, and you just have a mixture where it impacts these people's health to a catastrophic level. You're affecting the lungs, you're affecting the blood, you're affecting everything around them, and it keeps them from thinking clearly because they're so they go into such a brain fog from their bodies being so toxic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's funny that you should say that because that's where I was headed with this. One of the things that happens when you get these parasites and bacteria and things like that setting up housekeeping on and in your body, it does affect your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of supports each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
It kind of brings you to a whole other place health-wise. If you know anything about parasites, by the way, we will probably eventually do a show about parasites because everybody has a certain amount of parasites in their body because we're living things, and you never know. But living in a situation like that, I can't imagine what kind of parasites are going on. There's probably internal, topical. There's probably things like head lice or crabs or all those kind of things that are usually in the world of our homeless people.
Right.
And
right.
The inability to be able to get into your bathroom and utilize your bathroom space is another whole story. You know, our hands and human feces are two of the biggest carriers of any kind of bacteria or germs or parasites. I know this is kind of gross for a lot of people to understand, but we had a lot of colon therapy at the Institute because a lot of people, like what we talked about on the health show, about gut health, about being able to take nourishment and rid your body of what it doesn't need. In the perfect world, we eat food. It's supposed to nourish us. The kind of food we eat is supposed to give us something to keep us strong and healthy. That's, aside from being hungry, you're supposed to get nourishment. It's not just an opportunity to fill up the cavity that's between your in the middle of your body. So It's, hey, you're Rainey, supposed to speech about
Rainey,
it.
I'm gonna call back in 10 minutes. All right, I have to drop Nina off now, so I'll call back into the show in about 10 minutes.
All right. So if you're having food that just is fillers, then you're also not getting any nourishment from it. So a lot of people, when they do colon therapy, the colon therapist can see some of the parasites that come out of people. And it's kind of shocking to realize that you can have actually visible, large parasites that are released from your body. So when I think of these hoarders, and like I said, anyone that I've seen on TV is not just a messy house. I'm not just talking about a messy house. I'm talking about piles upon piles of clothing, live garbage. Live garbage to me is like food. Things like that that ferment. If you throw live garbage without a plastic bag into a garbage can, what do you find the next day? You find worms, you find flies, you find all kinds of living organisms that are in that food. So that's what upset me more than anything when I watch some of these shows, because I know from experience what's growing under all those mounds of stuff. So, but I also get the sentence from the lady who said, "This is my stuff, and I feel protected. My world is lonely, but this feels safe to me." So have you ever met anybody that even in the heat of the summer wears too many clothes? You know, maybe has on a hoodie jacket and long pants and socks and boots, and you're like, "Oh my God, aren't you warm?" "No, I'm fine." That's psychologically a source of protection. All those clothes make them feel safe and guarded. So I guess, and again, I'm going to do some more research about this, because every time I think of people living like that and nobody helping them or seeing that they have to get some of that to make some of that out of their way so that their home is, first of all, safer in the physical sense, but also safer in the world of germs and bacteria, and also safer in the world of mental health. Even though I get that they believe that they're, you know, coating themselves or protecting themselves by making their confines closer. You know, so much of this can go back through our days in the womb and feeling those close confines. If you have a baby that's fussing, somebody put on Facebook the other day, "I don't know what's the matter with the baby. I have to, like, keep him bundled up all the time." And I wrote back, "How old is the baby?" 6 weeks old. I said, "That's normal. That's why when you leave a hospital after a baby is born, they teach you how to make a real bunting, a tight, snug bunting, where you put the blanket, like, diagonally, and you wrap one side, then you pull up the bottom, and then you wrap the other side all the way around like a burrito. And you make your baby feel confined and safe." Why? Because that's where he or she just came from, right? That's where they just came from, and that's what keeps them in a safe place. So I suspect that these hoarders, even though most of them are over the age of 50, although a lot of times they have siblings who have grown up in this atmosphere and are now in the same place, very sadly, it could come from that, the need to feel safe and hugged, you know, surrounded by stuff. But the safety issues are more than just tripping over it. the safety issues include all of the things that we just talked about, the bacteria, the bugs, all the gross things that none of us want to deal with, they would have to be present in a home like that. And if you have wood in your house, the wood is rotting. So it also makes it unsafe. One of the shows I watched was in a mobile home. If you've ever lived in a mobile home, most of the floors in a mobile home have to be wood because they need to stay light because there's nothing underneath them. They're brazed, lots of 2x4s and things like that, but it's wood. If you have all this garbage that gets moisture in it or live food or something, you're also rotting your floors. Lots of things to consider, lots and lots
One of the shows I had seen with regard to hoarders that had animals, this one woman, she had a combination of problems. She had too many animals. She didn't have enough money to take care of them properly. Her heart was in the right place, but she wasn't looking at the disservice that she was doing to these animals because she had too many to take care of properly. And she had a bunch of dogs and cats in her house. I mean, she was just overrun. She had wildlife outside. She had dogs and cats in the house. But because she was a single woman and she really didn't take care of her property properly, she had garbage all over the inside of her house, and the dogs and cats would just, they would go in the house. And she was part of the, it wasn't a trailer home, but it was one of these modular homes, so it was sort of like a trailer flooring in it. And because of the animals going on the inside of the house, she had huge holes all over her kitchen. She had thrown plywood boards across them. But they ended up condemning her house. They had to come in. Well, they condemned it from living conditions, and they had to come in and completely level the one area of her house and rebuild it because there was no way of even repairing it. It had rotted through, right through. You could see the ground underneath the foundation of the house. And that was one of the situations that I had seen because, obviously, this started as a little problem, you know, and just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and all she kept doing was little patches, until she had these big gaping 2 foot in diameter holes all over the floor of her house. And the stench, if she lived in this, but the people that came in from the outside, they had to wear, you ever seen these special masks that construction workers wear where they have the two vents on either side? And
yeah.
It's like something from a science fiction movie. Those are the masks the people had to wear because the stench was so bad that they would go in there and they would start gagging. And meanwhile, she lived there and slept there.
Well, that's what I mean. And they become, you know, they become unaware and oblivious to what they're living in and how they're living in. It's horribly, horribly sad. And it's also...
It is.
It's also detrimental to, you know, like I said, not just their physical health, but their mental health. And something that I notice about when somebody, when their mental health is struggling, their physical health almost, not in all cases, but almost becomes almost immune to anything and everything. I don't know whether it's Mother Nature stepping in or what the deal is, but they seem to be able to, handle everything that happens to them. One of the shows I watched, the woman, again, very, very large woman, and she's walking down a hallway, and she can barely walk. She's got a cane, and she has to fall in there. I couldn't do that. I couldn't walk like on a tightrope down the middle of the hallway. She has to fall. And I looked and I thought to myself, you know, I don't see any bruises, nothing going on with her. I couldn't believe that she didn't fall all the time or hurt herself in this mess. I mean, these were mounds. These were like 6 foot piles of garbage.
I've seen some of those where people had to climb over. Two of the shows, one was with a woman, one was with a man, but then they lived in a two-story house, and on the stairs, there was not even a path. In order to get from the downstairs to the upstairs, they had to climb over boxes, and I'm like, oh my God, how dangerous is that? You know, I mean, one box topples, and that's it, and you're going down, you know? And this is how they would traverse their house. Now, a couple of the hoarders I saw was basically just over clutter. They box on top of box, property overbuying. This woman would spend, I mean, she was very successful when she was a general manager at a company, very successful on the outside, and her office where she worked was clean as a pin, okay? But then you go to her house, and she'd been dating her fiancé for 2 years, would never have him come to her house. He had no idea that it looked like this. So on some level, she recognized that her home structure was not appropriate, but she couldn't do anything about it. But she was clean. Mm-hmm. There was no garbage. Her house was beautiful, by the way. When they did finally empty it out, there was no repair needed. There was no mold, no bugs. So she didn't fall into the worst-case scenario where she started collecting garbage. Her, it was just strictly property. She just kept buying stuff. She was like a buyaholic. And there were issues. Something had happened to her. She was one of the people that suffered a traumatic event. I don't recall all the details. I just remember that the house was clean, but was just like floor-to-ceiling stuff. You could not move around her house. And she was mortified when her fiancé was finally brought in to see her home, and he was like in shock. He had no idea that her house looked like this. And it took the team an entire week to clear her space and help her, and they made her sell a bunch of the stuff because she just bought stuff she would never use in an entire lifetime. And then there was also a man who was a very similar story again, clutter, 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 but no garbage. So he didn't fall into that. But I would say probably 90% of the hoarders that I see, they get to the point where they don't discard anything, and they buy things they don't need. They get addicted to going to garage sales, that kind of thing, or yard sales, and they don't even throw out garbage, or they have too many animals, and the houses become unhealthy. They become a hazard. People can't visit them. Their children stop coming. They stop bringing the grandkids over because it's such an unsafe and unhealthy environment. But it's interesting that there's different types of hoarders out there, and some just with property, and some basically with everything. And some
just are collectors of stuff, and then other ones live in filth. Yeah, it is two different things, that's for sure. And I think it probably, from my amateur chair here, it probably has to do with their mental health as to which one they are and what their actual issues are as to why they're doing what they're doing. But I also...
One quick point before you continue. It also has to do, I think, with whether or not they're reclusive or not, because the two people that did not get into, like, hoarding garbage, they are living environments for most of the day, and then they would come there to sleep and that kind of stuff. So they were sleeping on top of boxes or couches or stuff. But and I just made this assessment right now thinking of the two stories where the people didn't collect garbage. They were both business people, and most of the people they knew didn't have a clue that their houses would look like this. But if you think of most of the hoarding shows, and I don't know if you've seen one other than this, they're all recluses. They've kind of broken away from society. They're not out and about. A lot of them don't even drive. They don't go anywhere. And I've seen that as the predominance. And it doesn't mean that it's all the cases, obviously. But I think most of the ones that get into hoarding animals or garbage are reclusive from society. And it's almost like they're setting themselves apart.
Right. I agree with you there. I think a lot that I saw that have to do with really, really terrible living conditions don't leave their home. You're right. But like the two sisters, I mean, they had a van, and they would go out and shop in the van. And they're the ones that had all the appliances and everything piled up in their kitchen. And the van looked exactly the same way. But that's how they spent their day. They'd get up, and they'd take off for a day of shopping. And
did they have a lot of garbage and rotten food and stuff like that?
Yes. The new stuff would be on top of the counters and relatively neat. I mean, you couldn't use a counter. You couldn't use any part of the house to cook or anything. That was one of the things that they said, you know, we bought all this stuff, and, you know, they couldn't even plug them in because there was no place to even do that. And their story was a little bit different from all the rest that I've seen, to be honest with you. It was like they were more like shopaholics. And
right.
That consumed them. So there was no time in a 24-hour day to do anything in the home, because they'd get up and take off for shopping and even pick up garbage on the side of the street, whatever, you know, looked like it was something that they needed to have, they'd take it home. And
right.
a lot of it was new, but not everything. But that's how they lived their whole life. So I know there are so many variables in how this affects different people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're right about the recluse who doesn't want to go out and do anything. That's a whole other story as well. That's a whole situation that, you know, and again, that has to do with making them feel safe. All the junk that's in there kind of protects them and makes them feel like nobody can get in and bother them. And I'm sure that has something to do with the decisions they make, aren't you? I mean, if I was afraid of everybody and I didn't want anybody getting into my space, I would fill up my space with stuff that I was comfortable with, right?
Right, right.
I mean,
well,
makes sense.
Right, and that's another symptom of some sort of a mental disorder, because our natural state is to want people around us, you know, and we've talked about that so often. You know, just having somebody touch your hand sometimes can just uplift you tremendously. You know, we're made to have people around us. So when you have people that are becoming reclusive or fearful of people, that's a symptom of a problem. That's a symptom of somebody that's been injured somehow and is now withdrawing. It goes far
mm-hmm.
beyond shyness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When they,
oh, yeah.
When they, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with being shy, really.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
mean,
this,
in
this,
my
this
lifetime,
is a
withdrawal. Well, two different things. Shy and feeling safe are two different
mm-hmm.
emotions or mindsets. Shy means that you don't want to interact because you've got some insecurities and stuff like that, and you just don't know how to interact with somebody else. But wanting to feel safe and protected is another emotion entirely. And those kind of people I've seen and have met in my lifetime, if you can get into their space and they feel safe with you, they kind of cling to you, and they appreciate or need your companionship. And
right.
the trick,
right.
of course, is to get them to believe or understand that they're capable of having that kind of relationship with a lot of people. Is the world a mean place? Yes, we talk about it every day. Every day with the bullies and in school and in work and even in families. We talk about that stuff every day, the unkindnesses that are done to each other because something in our lives is making us unhappy and we lash out and we're mean to other people. I get it. There are days when I think to myself, I don't want to talk to anybody else today. I don't want to talk to anybody else. You know,
I know,
really. I mean, I do a lot of talking, you know that. And I do a lot of counseling and I do a lot of listening. And there are some days when I just think to myself, oh, my goodness, I just can't. Because I always get worried about somebody when they come to me. And things seem pretty simple to me. Not all problems are simple, obviously. But the problems that you have conjured up for yourself are usually a lot more simple to get rid of than the real problems that can hit all of us. But a lot of times you can sense in somebody if they're uncomfortable in a social setting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie on I think it's on HBO or one of those right now, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And it's about a young boy who's kind of a introvert, and it's really kind of a funny little movie. I mean, it wasn't the favorite movie I've ever watched, but it did give me some insight to why somebody who's never gotten involved with friends or best friends or even just schoolmates all of a sudden is dragged into a scenario where, you know, he becomes a part of something. and he really doesn't know how to deal with it. And I thought to myself, I guess that's true of a lot of people, especially kids when they grow up in a home with just mom and dad and maybe a couple relatives that spend time with them. If they never get the opportunity to be social with other friends, then I can see where that would be a scary situation.
Sure.
It's hard for me to understand that because I grew up in a big family. And when you do
right.
grow up in a big family, being social is a part of life. You know, sharing your space is a part of life.
Right.
So,
right.
Have you ever known anybody, Shelley, that's like a lonely child and they struggle with social networking, so to speak? And, I mean, I've met lots of lonely children. I shouldn't say only children is what I mean to say. A child that grows up with no siblings and just mom and dad. I mean,
I only knew one only child. I can't remember her name now. I haven't known her in a while, but this is somebody when I was in New York I was friends with. And but she was very well adjusted because her parents were very outgoing. I guess she had a lot of friends in school. Because her parents were outgoing people, she was outgoing. And so she had no issues with being very friendly, being very open, that kind of thing. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And but she had a great personality and wasn't withdrawn at all. And but I've known other only children that I wasn't necessarily friends with, but I knew that they were an only child, that were sort of they had like attitude issues because they were the only child, they were used to getting their ways. Then when they got out into like the business climate, they didn't know how to compromise. They didn't know how to negotiate. It had to be their way or no way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen two different types of personalities. But this one girl, you would have thought she had a big family. She was just very outgoing, but I think that was because that's what her parents were like. And she just kind of, it never impacted her that she was an only child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she had a lot of friends,
and
I guess maybe that's why.
Yeah, I think I've seen both too. You saying what you just said, I can think of several people that were like excited to have good friends, and because they were only kids, I can remember one that I'm thinking about that I knew from sixth grade until like I was like 17, and that's how she was. She was excited to have outsiders, and every weekend she would invite kids to come spend the night at her house, and her mother and father embraced that and stuff like that. But I also have known people in my lifetime who didn't make friends that easy, and part of it was because they just never did. They were supported by mom and dad, and they were the people that they spent most of the time with, and I think that social training is incredibly important, and a lot of the things that I talked about on the Bullies to Buddy show this week was about teaching kids about social behavior and being able to get along with other people and putting yourself out there so that, like you just said, you know, it's often they feel like, you know, everything should be their way because they've never had to negotiate to have it any other way. It's just always been their way.
Some of the injuries from dealing with people that are unkind to you, or some of the losses that people suffer from and they don't have a sound support structure, they are sort of a loner to begin with to some degree, then something in their life happens that is traumatic or catastrophic to some degree, those are the people that are really vulnerable to become hoarders because then they withdraw into their own world even more deeply. And and depending on how deep-seated that injury is to them is how extensive the hoarding becomes. And then they end up, like you said, creating this world. It's like moat. If you look at it, their hoarding is like a moat keeping the alligators away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think, and that source of protection, you know,
right.
the more padding
right.
that surrounds them, the safer they feel. And you hear that a lot. You hear that a lot about people who who protect themselves with some kind of an outer shell that, you know, I once watched a video that was made for school-age children, and they talked about turtles and armadillos, because turtles and armadillos carry, you know, where they live with them, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
And that's how they stay safe. They just pull themselves in and keep, you know, then they're home and nobody can bother
right.
them, you know.
Right.
And I thought to myself, I'll bet a lot of young kids think that's the neatest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
It meant a lot to me to watch that, because it gave me a little bit, because that's not me, you know. So always we talk about this a lot, being able to appreciate other people's frame of mind and what keeps them okay and what keeps them not okay. So
right.
We're out of time, though. It was a funky day. I hope somebody got some worth out of today's show, because of all the stuff with the computer and the and Blog Talk. But I think it had something to do with the timer on my computer, because I reset it while we've been talking, and now everything on my dashboard seems to be kosher. So everybody go out there and have a great day today. It's a beautiful day here in Florida. I wish it was beautiful everywhere for everybody. God bless everybody. Have a good one, and come back tomorrow and join us for Recap Day. Thanks, Shell. I'll talk to you after a while, honey.
All right. Thanks, Renee. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.